Well, here we go with another of the programs, but it's not just another of these programs, John.
It's this not?
Is kind of a special one.
Oh, well, what, Wednesday? Is it Wednesday today? No, it's Tuesday.
No, it's Tuesday. That'd be good for you.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm doing my best impression of Bob McCown.
Well, my Alzheimer's does set in every once in a while. I concede that. Well, look, we got Wayne Gretzky on. You don't get that opportunity every day. I mean, here's the arguably, perhaps, the greatest hockey player of all time.
Stop. Not arguably.
Well,
not arguably. I'm look, sorry. Wayne, not arguably. The greatest player of all time. End of story. Period. Punctuation mark. Exclamation point. Period.
This is the wrong time to engage in this conversation. But I would say that there's an argument to be made for Bobby Orr, and I've made it on numerous occasions in the past. But people are entitled to have their own opinion, and I'm not going to tell you that saying Wayne Gretzky is the greatest of all time is wrong. But like you, I saw Orr play. I probably saw more of Orr play. I saw him for longer than you probably did.
No, I saw him from 66. I didn't see him in junior hockey.
Well, you're pretty young. I mean, your ability to assimilate talent was questionable at all points in your life.
Even this week?
Well, certainly in broadcasting.
Thank you.
Nonetheless, let's not go down that tangent. The great one is going to be with us, and we're going to spend some time chatting about a variety of things. I don't even know what as yet. And I believe this is, if not the first, then one of the few interviews that Wayne has done since the passing of his dad several months ago. And I assume that will be a part of the conversation as well. Mm-hmm. Since there's no hockey father, there's no sports father. I'm not sure is there another person out there who lived a normal life, as principally unpretentious, who has become as famous as Walter became simply because of his offspring?
Well, and in the end, Bob, Walter himself became that celebrity because of the way he handled himself and how he gave back to the country and the game.
I can't disagree with you. Without further ado, we'll take a quick break. And then when we come back, 99. The great one, Wayne Gretzky, joins us after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon on the program for this Tuesday, not quite midweek. And our special guest today, of course, needs no introduction, but we'll give him one anyway. Number 99, Wayne Gretzky is with us. Nice to see you. It's been a while. Are things okay?
Things are okay. You know, it's like everyone else, been kind of a miserable year and a bit. Obviously, the pandemic's been horrible throughout the entire world, but it seems to be when you're close to it in North America, it's devastating for families, for people. It's just been horrible. And I just can't imagine what some people have gone through, probably a lot worse than other people. But all in all, if you got your health and you have your family, things are good. Right now, things are okay.
I assume you've had your shot or shots?
I was really conscious of the line of people getting their shots. There's no reason to jump in front of anyone. At my age and relatively good health, we waited till it was our turn. It seems that here in Missouri, almost everyone that I know of has gotten their shots. We got our first shots 2 weeks ago. We're scheduled for our final shot tomorrow. But hopefully we can get this a little bit more rapid and up and running in Canada so we can get everyone vaccinated who wants to be vaccinated.
I don't know about John, but we haven't had the opportunity to chat since Your dad passed, and I wanted to offer our condolences. And I know it was a difficult time, and it will continue to be a difficult time. But I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Thank you. And it was a crazy time. You know, I wanted to make it clear to people because so many people have passed because of COVID. I wanted people to understand and know he didn't pass from COVID. Although COVID probably had a hand in his declining health over a course of 1 year. Basically, we secluded him. He had underlying conditions with a brain aneurysm, a mild heart attack, and of course, Parkinson's. So, you know, I think that his life was to be around kids and be around his family and to be around hockey fans and go to hockey games. And in some ways, I think the pandemic, probably for a lot of other people also, killed his spirit. Mm. So we got 3 or 4 days with him at home. When he first got out of the hospital, he broke his hip and broke his arm. And that sort of started the decline of his health. And so we got to spend a few days with him when he was pretty coherent. We watched some hockey games in the living room with him. And then, unfortunately, he took a turn for the worse. But, you know, I tell people this all the time. My dad was a man of great faith and never missed church and really believes in life after death. But he also believed that you're only here once. And he fought his hardest to the very end to still stay here and be around his family and kids. My wife was teasing that your mom's up there telling him, I'm not taking you yet, which is very cute. But, you know, he passed peacefully. And he left a great mark in our country, and people were very kind to him. And I know he was kind to a lot of people.
Yeah, the interesting thing, Wayne, is I wonder how many times over the last 2 months that you've thought of picking up the phone and saying, hey, how you doing, Dad? That's the tough part, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really hard. In today's day and age, too, you know, you have you can see each other. And we used to tease about it in the 80s because my dad worked for Bell Telephone. And one day we're going to be able to see each other on our telephones. Everybody thought you were crazy to even think that way. So I could actually see him and talk to him at home each and every day. I think for me, the hardest part was when my son Ty and his wife came to me and told me that they were going to have a baby and they were having a little girl. And the first reaction I had was to call my dad. And that was the first time it really hit me that he had passed on. And, you know, it's difficult. It's tough for anybody who loses a family member. You know, and I was saying to my friends, you know, you grow up as kids and your dad and your mom, they discipline you and they teach you the right way and they try to guide you in a direction. And then there comes a point in time where they sort of put away that cap and you become best friends. And so for me, you know, my dad was my best friend and my closest friend, whether it was good or bad, he was the first call I would make. And you don't replace that. And so I tell people this all the time, that you only have one mom and you only have one dad, and make sure you cherish it each and every day.
Interesting, Wayne, you and I had a long talk at the Joe Louis Arena at Gordy's Memorial. Mm-hmm. And you said at that time, you know what, Gordy did so many things for so many people. And I know now it's my turn to do the same thing, to be that person for the game. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, you could use the same speech about your dad. Your dad had a role. Your dad had a huge role in our country.
He had a huge role. I don't know. I can't remember the last hockey player that I've sort of ran into in this era. Who grew up in Southern Ontario or in Canada that said to me, you know, I was 8 years old, your dad took me through your basement. I'm willing to say that most guys who played hockey have been through his basement, and he loved doing that. I was telling a cute story. My wife's friend, who Holly Robinson Pete, who was on the show to talk, they were honoring Justin Bieber with his 16th birthday, and it was going to be a full hour on the show. And she had called Jen and said, can Wayne come down and be a surprise guest? And so anyway, long story short, I went down there and surprised him and walked on stage to do the show for a few minutes. And the first thing he said to me, you know, when I was 8 years old, my hockey team went through your dad's basement. So I always said, gosh, has anybody not been through my dad's basement? But, you know, it was like a monument to my dad. My dad loved it. And he started collecting stuff when I was 5 years old, my first hockey jacket, my first hockey stick, my first trophy, my first jersey. And he didn't collect it to say, you know what, one day I'm going to sell this. One day I'm going to make money off of this. He never did that. He just had this sense of, you know, I want to have this stuff. I want to enjoy it. And he didn't know at 8, 9, 10, if I was going to make the NHL, nor my brothers or my sister, but he collected everything, her track and field trophies, my brother's trophies, championship trophies from tournaments. That's what he loved to do. His family was everything to him, and people in Canada meant the world to my dad. It's as simple as that. And I don't think my dad had any enemies because he treated everybody with respect.
Well, he is known as the most famous hockey dad in the world. And obviously, you had an influence in that. And yet he became known to people as Walter. Not necessarily as your dad, Wayne.
Yeah, and you know, when we spent the 20 days together with my siblings and the grandchildren, I started to reflect and sitting in the room and telling the grandchildren, you know, I just really realized this, that you guys didn't know Grandpa before his brain aneurysm. You guys all were sort of born after him. You knew my dad after his aneurysm. And my dad always said everything in life happens for a reason. He went through a dreadful, horrible 5 years, but he came out on the other side, and his personality in some ways changed. And by that, I mean, pre-91, he was very shy, very quiet, didn't really want to do interviews, kind of stayed in the corner, and just, he was very shy about it. When he came out of his aneurysm, a lot of things changed in his personality. And one of them was he became very much more outgoing. I can remember one time in around 1998, I was home and he was sitting at the coffee table and my mom was bringing him tea and he was writing a speech. He was going to a luncheon and he said to my mom, and he always called her Phil, he said, Phil, will you just sit here and listen to my speech? And he started to tell his speech and my mom got up in the middle of it and walked away and he looked at me and he goes, can you believe this? They're paying me to go do speaking engagements and she just walks away from me. So, you know, his personality really changed for the person he became. And it was good for him because it made his life more enjoyable. He was much more relaxed. He wasn't as stressed. And he loved being Walter Gretzky. And he was so proud of being a Canadian and being from Brantford. And people treated him just tremendously.
Well, here we are, here witness to it. Here we are. We're talking to a guy that holds 60 NHL records, and we're talking about your dad. I mean, so.
Yeah. But I always tease him that he didn't get any goals in the NHL. I can honestly tell you that.
on that topic, one of the special days of my career, and I know it was of yours, was your last game at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And one of the things, there's two things that come to mind for me. First of all, you and Bob Cole hugging in the hallway. I have a bias. That was a great moment for all of us. And then the drive that you had said to your dad, we're going to go to the rink and we're going to do it the same way we always did it. And that was, we're going to drive together.
Yeah. I couldn't sort of write down or script how I wanted the last couple of days to go, but it was as perfect as it could be, other than we didn't win the game, but right. That was at that point immaterial. But you know, the day before we went for dinner, my mom and dad, our family and my wife, and we had a really nice dinner, and I said to him at the dinner, I said, you know, the very first game, you drove me to my first game. And I said, tomorrow I want to do something really special. I want you to drive with me to the rink. And he said, okay. He said, what time are you going to leave? And it was a 3 o'clock game. And sometimes he forgot a little bit, but he said to me, what time are we leaving? I said, you know, I like to get there 4 or 5 hours before. I always got there really early because I could get in the locker room and nobody could call me, nobody could talk to me. And I just kind of sit there with the trainers and just sort of get ready for the game. So I said, we're leaving at 10 o'clock. Now, 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning in Manhattan, there's really not a lot of traffic compared to Monday through Friday. So we had a really nice drive to the game, got to the garden, went up to the locker room. And my dad would never go in the locker room unless they said, come on, you can come in. He'd always just sort of stop. And he'd stand outside and I said, Dad, you can come in the locker room. There's nobody even here for another 2 hours, so come on. So he came in, we just sat around with the trainers and I was signing sticks for all the guys and doing things to get ready for the festivities. And after the game, Dana said to me, how was the ride to the rink? I said, I got to tell you, historically it was a tremendous ride, but it was the worst drive of my life. And she said to me, why is that? I said, he spent the entire 20 minutes telling me, you know, you can play one more year. So I said, no, I said, Dad, I said, I got 9 goals this entire season. I think it's time for me to move on. So that, it was a great day.
With Wayne Gretzky, we have all lost family members. And one of the things that has occurred to me is that, and maybe it's just me, but when you lose somebody that's that close to you, I think you try and remember as much as you possibly can in the ensuing days. You try and remember all the things that you hadn't thought about for years and years. And I, for me, invariably, there's always one moment that I can't get out of my head. It could be at any point in their life. Was there one of those for you, Wayne?
Oh, there was a lot, but from a hockey point of view, my very first year, I was 5 and I played on a 10-year-old hockey team. And I remember like it was yesterday, and we had our team dinner and dinner banquet. It was the players, 15 players and parents. And, you know, it was one of those sort of hot dogs and French fries, and the coach would get up and thank the players. And at that point in time, they handed out trophy, best defenseman, most valuable player, leading scorer. I think there was a most improved player. And I didn't win a trophy. And I was just turned 6 and I was in the car and we were driving to the house. And he could tell that I was not disappointed, but I was just sort of stunned, I guess is probably a good word. And when you're 6 years old and you feel like the world's crumbling. And he said, is anything wrong? I said, I didn't win a trophy. Now I got 1 goal the entire year. I don't know what trophy thought I was going to win. And he turned to me, I'll never forget, it was like yesterday. He put his hand on my knee and he said, one day you're going to win a lot of trophies. Don't worry about it. And I remember I got out of the car and I felt like $1 million. And, you know, he didn't know. He was being a good parent trying to cheer up the 6-year-old son who was devastated that he didn't win an award. And I remember it like it was yesterday.
You watching hockey these days?
I watch a ton of hockey. I watch a lot of games. When I lived on the West Coast, it was a lot easier. You get the 4 o'clock games and then sort of the 7 o'clock games.
Right.
In Missouri here, I'm getting a lot of 9 and 10 o'clock games, which is fine. But I watch a lot of hockey. I think the hockey's been just truly remarkable. I was saying yesterday, especially in Canada, because there's no fans, the intensity level these kids are playing with has truly been remarkable. My hat goes off to the players, the league, the coaches, everybody involved that are trying to make this work. And I said, their energy that they're playing with, and you watch the Leafs play and the Oilers and Vegas, it's truly really been spectacular. Can you imagine being a great Canadian band, let's say Bryan Adams or Tragically Hip, and going into the biggest arena in Toronto or Ottawa and playing a concert and no fans? Mm-hmm. My gosh, there'd be no energy. It would be just, okay, here we go. And sort of go through the motions. Now, I'm not being critical. I'm just saying it's hard to get that energy without fans. And our players deserve so much credit for the intensity that they're playing with. I think the hockey's been absolutely amazing.
Well, it's intriguing you mention that because it's something obviously you've never been through. It just occurs to me that, you know, when you were 5 years old and starting out, you probably had 20, 30, 40 parents in the stands at the very least. So there was always somebody to cheer you on. And while there are people in the NHL arenas, they aren't really, they're not fans. They're there because they have to be there because they're working. They're working. Exactly.
And top of that, it's still, whether you're 6 years old or in the NHL, you love to look up and see your family. They don't even have family.
Of course.
Yeah. That's sad.
It is getting better in the United States, but certainly in our country, it's disappointing.
It's tough, and you know, we got to follow the guidelines. I mean, the doctors and people, they know way more than we all know, and you know, let's try to be as safe as possible. But I'm sitting here yesterday thinking, okay, let's say whoever comes out of Canada, you know, where are they going to play their home games? Are they going to be able to cross the borders to go back and forth for a 7-game series? How's that all going to unfold? And then I'm reading yesterday that Vegas is hoping that by June 1st, they're going to have sellouts. And is that an unfair advantage that Vegas is selling out and playing in front of 17,000 people screaming, and a team like Toronto or Edmonton or Winnipeg have no fans? I don't know. I mean, it's just a really crazy time for everyone. But it sounds like Vegas, if they continue on, could have quite a leg up.
I want to chat a little bit about your perspective of and perception of the game in the midst of the pandemic. And I know we started to do that, but I want to continue that. Take a very quick break and come back with Wayne Gretzky after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon on the program today. The great one is with us, Wayne Gretzky, from his home in St. Louis. You never went through anything like this. None of us have ever been through anything like this. But one of the things John and I have talked about repeatedly on this show is trying to get a perspective of how do we evaluate these teams? In before COVID, the three of us could sit down, take a look at 82 games in a regular season and say, okay, based on what we've seen and these teams playing each other, et cetera, this is what we think. That doesn't exist now. You've got teams playing 7 other teams, or in the case of Canada, 6 other teams. That's it. How do you quantify the relative skills of a Tampa, a Vegas, a Colorado, a Toronto, who are playing in different places and not playing against each other at all?
Well, from my point of view, I think it's a little bit easier than people think. And I think this started with the salary cap and revenue sharing. I think the equality, the equalness of the game and the teams is so much closer than it's ever been. You take the 4 teams in the West, Vegas, Colorado, Minnesota, St. Louis. Any one of those 4 teams, in my estimation, can come out of that division. Now, obviously, Vegas is favored and Colorado, but any one of those 4 teams can come out. And then you look at Tampa Bay and Carolina.
Florida,
Nashville. Don't count them out. So the parity in the game is so much better. And let me say this. The team who comes out of Canada, they might not get past the semifinals, but they're not going to embarrass anyone. They're as good. The top 4 teams in the Canadian division are as good as any 4 teams in the National Hockey League. They are not going to embarrass themselves. I think the equality in the game is much more closer. The parity of the teams and the players is much closer than people think. Sure, there's always going to be 1 or 2 teams that are rebuilding. And you look at a team like Ottawa, my gosh, they're fun young team to watch. It reminds me a little bit of the Oilers of 1980. They just play hard and they're fun to watch and they're going to be good. So I wouldn't read too much into that. I think the teams are a lot more equal than people think or realize. And I wouldn't count any one of the 4 playoff teams of the Canadian division moving on to a Stanley Cup final. That to me is definitely a possibility.
Can you imagine playing in a 56-game schedule and you play an opposition team 10 times? Now, I say that knowing the WHA.
It reminds me of Edmonton. We had to play Hartford 14 times, I think, and we played those games in Springfield in the 6,000-seat arena. And I remember the first time I walked in, I went, Gordie Howe plays in this arena, because the roof in Hartford had caved in, and that was my first sort of look at playing in Hartford. But, you know, we had that. We played Quebec, we played Birmingham, Cincinnati, Winnipeg, and you played them, I think, 14 times. And it gets redundant. It gets, yeah, it's tough. And, but listen, for a one-year sort of hiatus, I think this has been thrilling for the Canadian fans. Do they want to keep it forever? Probably not. But it's been, I think, great for Canadians to see Edmonton in Toronto, Edmonton in Montreal, Winnipeg going to Vancouver and Calgary. I think the fans have had fun with it. You're like, it's like everything else in this pandemic. You make the best of it, right? And I think the fans and the players are trying to do their best to make the best of it.
Well, I have a perspective on this, and you know,
I'm shocked.
I'm much more of a casual fan. I'm not really a casual fan, but much more than you two guys who have been in the business your entire lives, right, around the game. So I now get a chance to see Toronto, Montreal play three times in a row, basically every other night. I'm hypothesizing, but that's what's happening. So as that casual fan, I was thinking about this actually last night when they played. I now have a greater familiarity with the Montreal team because I saw them play a couple against the Toronto Maple Leafs a couple of nights ago.
Right.
And so it's almost like a playoff series all the time. And it takes till game two or three of a playoff series for me as a fan to really be able to assimilate what that Montreal team, who I've only seen once or twice a year, is really all about and what they do. Right. So I wonder if there are actual advantages to this. I think you're right. The NHL is not planning on seeing this Canadian division reoccur after the pandemic is over. But is there merit in considering it, Wayne?
Well, there's some merit to it. You know, you think back to the original six, and then we went to 12. Anybody who grew up, you knew every player on every team because there was only so many teams. What you're saying is true in a sense that we get to see Montreal. You're getting to learn about Winnipeg, and they have great players. But you're missing out on watching this young, talented, great Florida team. Like,
that's true.
You'd be hard-pressed as a Canadian to know every guy unless you watch every night of hockey. So in one hand, it's great. In the other hand, what are you missing, guys in Dallas and L.A. and Anaheim and Tampa Bay? So, you know, you try to find a mix that works for everyone because we have so many great players throughout the game today, and you want to be able to have fans in Vancouver or Winnipeg be able to see a guy play at least once a year, which makes it fun.
What do you, and I know the answer. I actually don't want the stereotypical answer.
Okay.
What do you think of Connor?
Oh, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
So Charlie Huddy asked me one day, what do you say to him? I said, you know, Connor and I have a really nice relationship. He's a wonderful, mature young man. And I'm not the coach, so I stay out of his way and I stay out of the organization's way. But I did give him one piece of advice a few years ago. I said, you know, my dad used to tell me, shoot more. And the only piece of advice I've ever given him really was, you know, you got the best shot in hockey or one of the best shots in hockey. You're up there with guys like Ovechkin and Auston Matthews. Just fire the puck. And he's shooting a lot more, but he's just taken his game to another level. His energy level and his intensity, you can just see it in his face. Yeah, he wants to get 100 points. We all have personal goals that you sort of track down and say, okay, I want to try to do this. But ultimately, it's about winning. And he's taken that team on his shoulders. And he's really taking our team to another level, and his game's going to another level. And for the casual hockey fan who gets to see this guy play, you've got to be just sitting there going, wow, that's just not normal what he's doing and what he can do on the ice. His speed in itself and his hockey sense is just off the charts. And listen, it'd be shocking to me if he didn't win the Hart Trophy because he's been that dominating. But then I look and see, gosh, you don't count on a guy like Sidney Crosby. He's played a lot of the year without Malcolm. Their team is in first place or close to first. And Sid's had an unbelievable year for an old guy like him at 35. And, you know, Ovechkin and Crosby have sort of carried the torch for 14, 15 years and been truly remarkable for our game. But Connor's been that special. I'd be absolutely shocked if he's not the MVP of the NHL this season.
I have thought of this many times. I'm very intrigued by your response to this question. You played in an era where there was plenty of scoring, but you also played in an era where it was extremely physical.
Yeah.
That part of the game is not gone, but it is not what it once was.
Ask Tom Wilson.
Yeah.
Well, look, well,
different game. It's like parenting. You know, parenting today is different than it was in the 80s. You know,
you're telling me.
You know how many times the most feared line you could ever hear from your mother in the old days was, wait till your father gets home. If my wife said that today, my kids would have laughed. But, you know, so you change with the times, right? The game is faster. The NHL and the union got together and they eliminated basically hooking and holding. You know, we never eliminated fighting. It's part of the heritage of our game and the history of our sport. What we did was we eliminated fighting in minor hockey and in junior hockey and in college hockey. So now these kids who get to the NHL, they've never fought.
Yep.
We used to, guys who grew up fighting in junior B and then major A, midget hockey, American League. Then they get to the NHL, they were fighters. Well, nobody fights anymore. So we've sort of eliminated fighting from the game without saying you can't fight anymore. And the physical play is different now because the players are so fast and the equipment is so good. But if you do get hit that one time now, you don't have your head up. Because of the size and the power of the players, you can get hurt pretty badly. So it's not as so much as hooking and holding and not so much open ice hitting because the game is too fast. But if you do end up getting cranked, these guys are big. It's still a physical game. You still have to be able to take a hit to make a play. That's still part of the game and that part will never go away.
I know you would want to play the game today if age hadn't caught up to you and all of us. Mm-hmm. How would you like playing in this era?
Oh my God.
This style of the game.
I would have loved it.
Of course.
Yeah. And can you imagine Mario Lemieux playing today? No. Nobody can hook him or hold him. He'd be a lot like Connor. Like Connor could draw a penalty almost every shift because he's so fast. And the players have so much respect for him, but the only way you can slow Connor down is by getting in front of him and holding him up. I mean, it's almost impossible. But I see a guy like Mario playing in the game today, and I would think that because of his smarts and his hockey sense and his size, Mario would do very well in this day and age. There's certain players that can play in any era. Messier, Mario, Bobby Orr, Gordie Howe. I would have loved to have tried it. I would have loved to have been part of this, but, you know, I always say this, that, you know, 39 is an old man in sports, but you're a young man in the real world. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm 60, I'm feeling in between that young man thing, but I'm desperately too old for being a, you know, hockey player.
It puts perspective that Gordie played at 52.
It's amazing. And I said, he got 20 goals in the NHL at 50 years old. Now, talk about a record. Who is going to, Chris Jellio is going to get 20 in his career, but he tried to play till he's 50.
Well, the only guy I can think of that might would be in that category maybe is Jágr, but I mean, let's be honest, as great a player as he wasn't Gordie Howe.
Yeah, so. And I just read yesterday Jágr is going to play again.
Don't play another year.
Yeah. Good for him. You know, I know Jágr. He used to spend the summers with us in L.A. and train, and just he's a tremendous young man. And he's like Gordie Howe. You're going to have to steal his skates. You know, somebody said Harry Neal was when he was coaching the Hartford Whalers. I was walking out of the morning skate in the WHA, and I saw the trainer grab Gordie Howe's skates. And I go, hey, what are you doing with those? He goes, oh, the coach wants me to hide him because he doesn't want Gordie to skate this morning. If I don't hide his skates, Gordie's going to get on the ice. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, really? He goes, yeah, I got to hide the skates. That's how much Gordie Howe loved hockey.
We only got a couple of minutes. I know John probably has 100 other questions mm-hmm. that he won't get a chance to answer or ask, but I got to ask you, I mean, golf has always been kind of the second love for you in terms of participation, and I think observation too. DJ is, you know, in the family now. I have fond recollections of going to your tournament up in Collingwood when you had it. Do you miss that event? Do you miss that kind of stuff?
I miss it desperately because not only was it fun and we'd raise money for charity, but it was great for the community. You know, it gave the community a boost. It helped minor league golf, sort of that tour is sort of the AAA or the American League.
Yeah.
We had a lot of great players that played in our tournament that went on to have great careers that people didn't know their names back then. But
that's right.
That's the way it is. But yeah, I miss it. But it was a lot of hard work. Hopefully one day through this pandemic, we can get back to doing events like that. But yeah, you're right. It's fun watching Dustin. My gosh, I never thought when I retired from hockey that I would get that same feeling in any sport of being nervous, getting excited, being disappointed, and of course, euphoria of winning. In November, you know, the Masters was so captivating, so exciting. Jen and I got to spend the whole week there, and we really, truly, from Sunday to the following Sunday, it was a lot of fun. And when we got on the airplane after he'd gotten his jacket and everything that goes with it, we were on the airplane with his family and Claude Harmon and his trainer and a couple of friends. And as we were flying to Florida, I said, you know, this is one of the dreams I had as an NHL player, that I could get on a team plane after winning the Stanley Cup on the road. And I never got that. We won the four championships I won in Edmonton, which were amazing. And I loved it. But I kind of always thought, gosh, it'd be so much fun to win on the road. And the lights went out in Boston, so I didn't get that opportunity. But that trip from Augusta to Florida, I remember looking at him saying, all right, this is pretty amazing. So yeah, it's been fun. My grandchildren are wonderful, two boys. And as I said, my son's expecting a little girl. So life has been great. And it's been a lot of fun.
You ever see yourself back? I know you work for the Oilers and Mr. Cates, but can you see yourself getting deeper back into the game, coaching, managing ever again?
No, I don't believe so. You know, listen, I wouldn't trade anything in for the world being a player. And then I was so fortunate that I got hired to run Team Canada in 02, and I loved every second of it. To be part of winning a gold medal in Salt Lake City, to being a player 98 in Nagano, and unfortunately we didn't win, but what an experience it was. To being involved in the NHL and then coaching, I look back and I wouldn't trade it in for the world, because I learned so much more about the game and I love the game so much. But you know, I'm at a point in my life where I like to be a little bit more or less stress-free and be able to just enjoy the games. And I get a little bit nervous watching Edmonton because I do have a relationship with them and I pull for them and I hope they do well. And but to be in it each and every day, I just don't see that as something I really want to do. And I really love what I'm doing right now, and I'm enjoying life immensely.
Well, you'll be a part of the game forever, you know that, whether you're involved directly or indirectly. And I suspect you'll be involved at least indirectly as you are now for the rest of your life. We wish you and the family good health and happiness, and look forward to the day when we can all get together and chat again, and maybe even on a golf course someplace.
I hope so, and I really appreciate you guys having me on. I had a lot of fun. You guys be safe and take care.
Thanks, Wayne.
Okay, guys.
The legendary Wayne Gretzky. We'll be back after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon here to wrap this up, put it in a brown paper bag, leave it on somebody's doorstep.
You know, so, I couldn't help but think when Wayne was talking about it late in the interview about being involved in the Olympics in Salt Lake in 2002, I happened to be there as well. I was working for NBC. And about two games in to the Olympic Games, it became very obvious that Wayne was one of the key stories for the whole Olympic hockey tournament. would not play one shift, would not do one thing, but Wayne was going to be a story right from beginning to end.
You should clarify what his role was at that point.
He was the general manager.
General manager.
He was the general manager of Team Canada. So I went to the brass at NBC saying, listen, I know we've got lots of things going on. I know there's lots of venues, but I need another camera. I need one more camera. And they said, well, what do you want the camera for? I says, I just want to put it on Gretzky. I just want to make sure that every time Wayne gesticulates or does anything in his in the manager's box, we have it.
So you're talking about an ISO during the games?
Totally.
Okay.
An gotcha. ISO camera so that we can, when Canada gets scored on, when the refs do something, when an event occurs on the ice, we need the ability to say, well, because every Canadian, and even though I was doing it for the American audience, every Canadian and every hockey fan is saying, oh, something happened. What's Wayne doing? Wayne's got to be doing something. And for 16 days, we got gold because Wayne, and he talked about how excited he gets now about DJ's golf. But I'll tell you what, he was fantastic. And if you watch any of the highlights of the Salt Lake Olympics, which are hard to find because of the IOC rules, there are so many shots of Wayne with his fist in the air or standing up. And it was because of his passion for his team, for Team Canada, for the game that made one of the great storylines of that Olympics of 2002 in Salt Lake City.
Were you at all surprised that Wayne was as open in his reaction to what was going on the ice? I mean, he was pretty demonstrative when he scored goals in the National Hockey League. You know, Bobby Orr was the, we talked about Bobby Orr versus Wayne Gretzky, the endless debate.
And both are great. Both are great. I'm not demeaning Orr one bit.
No. But Orr, my memory of Bobby Orr was how casual he was after he scored. He rarely raised his arms in the air or got fist pumped or he did anything else. He just kind of skated back to his position and moved
That's
on.
That's right. Well, in fact, made sure it really it became part of his whole DNA was, I just scored. I'm done. I don't need to celebrate. That became part of it.
Wayne was not that
Wayne
guy.
No. Wayne from the, and so I started covering Wayne when the Oilers joined the NHL in 1979. From that first game, Wayne was emotionally involved. Absolutely. Every moment. And I think you got a sense of it in our discussion, Bob. So aware of everything that's going on the ice, on the other bench, with his teammates, in the room. Wayne, we always joked about Wayne's sixth sense. Well, he had it because that was one of his great attributes, how much he understood what was going on and just as importantly, why it was going on. And that's one of the things, in addition to his obviously great physical ability, his mental ability might have been his greatest trait. And the same, and you know, there's lots of people, or included, that aren't able to translate that when they get into a management position, but Wayne did, and it became, as I said, one of the great stories of Canada's first Olympic gold in 50 years.
You asked him, I think it was you. You asked him about his, whether he'd see himself directly involved in hockey again as a coach, manager, whatever. He did coach in Phoenix. Couple of years? Three?
Well, I don't remember maybe, exactly. Yeah.
In a minute, how good a coach was he, in your opinion?
I think it's one of the issues that you have, that great players lose patience with players that don't see the game as easily as they do.
Yeah.
And we saw it with Orr tried to coach a little bit in Chicago late in his career. There are a lot of great players don't become very good coaches. That's not to
well,
say
because they're great good because coach. I'm sorry, John. They're great because they have that inbred talent skill.
Right. Right.
And it's not that they don't work hard, but it is impossible to convey what they have to somebody else who does not have that.
But it's interesting. I can guarantee you though, Bob, and Wayne says he's not involved in the game. I can guarantee you, in fact, I know that there is a bunch of people in different areas of the National Hockey League that if an issue comes up, someone will always ask the question, what does Wayne think? Let's call Wayne. Wayne Gretzky, in his own very quiet way, has become one of the great sounding boards for the game.
Right.
You know, there are people in the NHL offices. There are obviously people in the Edmonton Oilers that, he's become a wise person for many people. They don't necessarily need to take his advice, but I can guarantee you there's lots of people that will say, hey, what does Wayne think? We better get that. We better get his input.
Well, and wisely so. We got to get out of here. Time is our enemy. For Shannon McCowan, and again, our thanks to Gretz. We'll see you tomorrow.